Hello, everybody. Welcome to what will be the final post-practice report of the 2025 Seahawks season. Not because they will stop practicing, but because media access is over after today's practice, at least at the VMAC. I will not be traveling with the team to Green Bay, so I will not see the joint practice. You can follow Brady Henderson and Bob Condotta and Mike Dugar and I think Greg Bell, a couple other people. I think those four at least will be there. So you get a little bit more practice from the media, not from yours truly, though. After they get back, we will switch into a more steady state rhythm of we will be able to go out and watch them warm up and stretch, and that's it. And then they kick us out and they will do practice. We will not be able to watch. And I will continue to talk to you about press conferences and tons of other shows and working on all that now. But this is it. This is it. This is the last practice I will have been able to give you a kind of full perspective on. And I'll get you run down through what happened today. There's actually some meaningful bits of news and changes. So I'll cover those. Also, while the Seahawks were practicing, some news broke about a certain free agent visiting the Seahawks. I will tell you about that. And also we'll be, going over what that could mean and why the Seahawks might be taking this visit. So we will cover that. And then I'll lead you right into the Seahawks collective at 5 o'clock. So 5 o'clock Pacific time, head on over to the Seahawks Collective channel where myself, Michael Sean Dugar, Annabelle Hasselback, and Rob Staten will talk to you about all things Seahawks tonight at 5. So all that, but we will get you started here with my practice report. And a couple things of note, I will say. One is, you know, as I said before the show or before practice began, when I talked to Jared Ivey today, and Jared Ivey was great, by the way. I had him send a message to his mom, and his mom responded on Twitter. So she certainly was paying attention, and I love that. But it's a week until cutdown day. It is a week until cutdown day. And you know what that means? That means that certain people that maybe have been doing their best to make their way back from an injury pushed just a little bit harder to make sure they were on the practice field. What did that look like? Well, it meant guys like Shamar Jean Charles, the cornerback, back at practice after missing a lot of time. It meant Josh Ross back at practice, the linebacker, who he was kind of back yesterday or 2 days ago, I should say. But he was out participating. Great to see that. I think he's a guy that, for me, I still think makes this roster and is potentially a big part of the special teams and one of their better backup inside linebackers. Fans haven't got a chance to see him as much, but that's my read of him. We saw Kenneth Walker practicing after Mike McDonald on Monday. Kind of inferred that he'd like to see Kenneth Walker get a few more team drill reps and be out there a little bit more often. And Kenneth Walker was out there today. We saw Tyreek Smith back at practice. So a number of guys kind of coming back into the fold, making this last push for the roster. So we'll see how that finishes out for those guys. The Shamar Jean Charles thing for me is particularly interesting because I had him ahead in the cornerback room for a while, not only because of his play as a corner, but because he's also a really good special teams player. I don't know if he can make up for the time that he missed at this point. We'll see. But right now, you know, as I've told you, I think I still have Nehemiah Pritchett above him, but who knows what will happen over the next week. Anything's possible. I know people are kind of curious about what's going on with Uchenna Nwosu. He is still not practicing. We know he was he passed his physical, but he is not officially out there doing stuff. So that was another piece. Torrey Horton not yet practicing. We'll talk about that once he's back on the practice field. Again, I don't think that's anything serious. Mike McDonald has said that. So those are a bit of like the pieces of who's in and who's not. The story of practice was kind of a tale of two halves, I would say. The first half of practice was Leonard Williams and the defensive line just being unblockable. Leonard Williams, one of the first team drill plays, just blows by Gray Zabel for a sack. He, on another play, a couple plays later, blows by a different offensive lineman. DeMarcus Lawrence blows by another offensive lineman on the same play. And so he was just kind of everywhere. A little bit after that, Jamie Sheriff blows by, I think it was Mike Jarrell, but I'm not sure. But the defense was putting up the as good of a pass rush as I've seen them get in a while, and was essentially just ending every play with a sack. Now, everyone's going to say, oh man, this means that our offensive line's not good. You can say that if you want. Leonard Williams has been part of these other practices as well, and it's not like he wasn't trying. This happens. This happens where days where the defense gets the offense, and there's times where the offense gets the defense. Maybe Mike McDonald installed some things that Clint Kubiak wasn't as prepared for, or John Benton, or maybe the offensive line was a little bit off. Whatever the case, it started off with the defensive line just winning in pass rushing. Now, this wasn't 1v1 drills. This was team drills. All right. Then the second half of practice, things started to settle for the offense. And all of a sudden, you know, Jalen Milroe completes a deep ball to Cody White over the middle, and then takes a read option, and Milroe is gone down the sideline. Then Sam Darnold, I won't get into exactly what I saw because I think I'm probably not supposed to, but there was an exotic play that they had. Maybe one of the other reporters that has been on the beat longer and can get away with it will tell you more specifics, but we saw Jalen Milroe at a different position, and he was out there with Sam Darnold, and there was an interesting play that they ran. I won't tell you what that was, but it was interesting. We saw Leonard Williams again at this point. He blows by, he kind of swam inside, looped around Anthony Bradford and Jalen Sundell and came around the middle, causing all sorts of problems. But then Drew Locke, there is another blitz, and he hits Jake Bobo on a quick 15-yard slant over the middle. Come back a little bit later, and guess who started showing up after all of these practices? Marquez Valdez-Scantling. He ends up with two of the bigger catches of the day. He catches one, I want to say 40 yards downfield with tight coverage from, I think that was from Sam Darnold. He caught another one later from Drew Locke, a big catch over the middle. These were two of the bigger plays I've seen from MVS over the course of camp. So that was interesting to see and good to see. Sorry, Finn just broke in. Let me get him out of here and I'll continue to share.
Finn, you could say hi real quick.
Finn wants to say hi. Yes, he wants to lick my mouth. All right. Sorry about that. From there, another big completion to Cody White. A really crazy catch from Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the red zone with tight coverage. One that had all of the defensive players on the sideline turning towards the replay screen and just kind of looking in disbelief, like, how did he catch that? And so that was a big play. Then Dariq Young makes a great one-handed catch on an out route. Then it's back to the defense. Patty O'Connell picks off a Drew Locke pass, returns it for a touchdown, and then goes back to the offense. Ricky White catches a big pass over the middle down the seam from Jalen Milroe. So it was kind of a back and forth practice. The defense was kind of dominating early, the defensive line especially. Then the offense was doing its thing. Defense kind of came back and forth. But I think it's kind of what you want to see in these practices. Each team, each side of the ball kind of making some plays and making some impact. And overall, good solid practice. They were not in pads. This was not a walkthrough. This was a normal kind of practice. And so tomorrow they will head out to Green Bay and they'll do their joint practice. And, you know, we'll go from there. But I will, in just a second, I'll kind of talk to you through my, like my first practice report to my last, and kind of like some of the, just off the top of my head, off the dome, kind of some of the storylines of where we started to where we are. Before I do that, a couple things. One, make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. If we get to 25,000 subscribers on YouTube or 10,000 followers on Instagram, and we're getting closer each and every day, I will give away two tickets to the Seahawks versus 49ers. If we do both of those things, I will give away more tickets to the Seahawks versus 49ers. So take a second, do it. Doesn't cost you a penny, just takes you a little bit of time, and I would greatly appreciate it. All right. Also, before I get into the overall camp storylines, the conversation that's just kind of breaking is that Dalton Risner, the guard who played for the Vikings last year, is a free agent. He made a visit to the Cincinnati Bengals. He is now making a trip to the Seahawks. So there's a question about whether he will also make a trip to the Steelers. He's kind of evaluating his options. Dalton Risner, for those that do not know him, 30 years old. He is a guard, 6'5", probably 320 pounds. And this is a guy who's played the last couple of years in Minnesota, played his first four seasons in Denver, has generally been a better pass protector than he has been a run blocker. He only played 537 snaps last year, played almost exclusively, I think, right guard. And he finished the season, for what it's worth, with four straight games of over 70 pass block rating on PFF. Actually had four of his final six games were 80 or above as a pass protector. His run blocking has not been that good. I do want to take a quick look at how he did in zone blocking. I don't see his grade in zone blocking, but let me pull that up for a second. We'll get a little bit more information for you guys, and I'll talk about why this might be happening. Because, you know, I was kind of joking about the Bengals bringing in Dalton Risner. The fact that the Seahawks are bringing him in is interesting to me. And I have some theories about why they might be doing that. So let me pull open. Before I do this, I want to pull open, the grades last year on zone run blocking. So there's Dalton Risner. He was a better zone run blocking guard than a gap run blocking guard, at least last year. He had a 62 grade as a zone run blocking guard, had a 56 grade as a gap. I don't know. I'm going to take a quick look over other years to see if that is at all like changes. But generally speaking, he has not been a good run blocker over the course of his career, at least by PFF standards. And keep in mind, this guy is available as a free agent. If he was a absolute game changer, that probably wouldn't be the case. So I think you're talking about depth more than anything else. 2023, I should say, he was a 60.5. He's always been, based on what I'm seeing, a better zone run blocking guard than a gap. And the thing that I think matters the most is the fact that he played 4 years in Denver and that he overlapped with some of the coaching staff here. He overlapped with Clint Kubiak when he was in Denver. He overlapped with Rick Dennison. So they have familiarity with him. They know what he's capable of. He knows this offense and has operated in it. So if they're seeing him as a guy that they could just kind of plug in there and be good depth, that's great. And as I've kind of brought up, for me, I'm doing one more check just to see how he did when he was, I mean, for what it's worth, when he was in Denver, he did not do that great as a run blocker either. But in any event, why would the Seahawks be looking at Dalton Risner? I think this is not about the starting guard situation personally. I think this would be about depth. And I think it's about the fact that I've told you, when I gave you my roster, I didn't have Christian Haynes on it. I think they're looking for a place they can move Christian Haynes, anyone that will take him. That's my guess. The other thing that goes on there is, I mean, Bryce Cabledew and Mason Richmond, I think, are good developmental projects. I don't think you would feel really good about those guys being your backup guards right now. And other than that, you don't really have a lot of options. Satawa Lamea has not been a great fit so far this camp. So I don't know if they like their guard depth right now. And Risner, I think, is a guy that you'd feel much better if you had to, plug him in as a starter for a few weeks, if Anthony Bradford gets hurt or Gray Zabel gets hurt or whatever. I think you feel much better about Dalton Risner than you do about your current guard depth. So I think this is a depth exploration move. I don't think this is about coming in as a starter. That's probably partially what Dalton Risner's going around and kind of evaluating which teams he probably could go into Cincinnati and start, is my guess. That is a, you know, that's not a great offensive line. And some people might say this is not a great offensive line in Seattle. I disagree, but he's going to be evaluating the teams and the teams are going to be evaluating him. We'll find out where that lands. But that's kind of my early read on the Risner news. And look, we've always talked about the fact that having some kind of veteran presence in that room would be a good thing. If they feel like this is the guy that they want in there, and John Benton's already had opportunities to bring in veterans and said, nah, I'm good with the young guys. If he's on board with this, then I think that that's a much better sign of this is a guy that they potentially want in that locker room. So, some people are talking about, can Olu Oluwatimi play guard? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I don't think he's got ideal play strength at center. I think that gets exposed even more at guard. So I think Olu is a one position player. Now, can he play guard in a pinch? Absolutely. Do you want him there? No, I really don't think so. I don't think that's a great fit for him, but we will see. We will see. So that's the Dalton Risner news. As far as just quickly going through some of the storylines, I mean, you got to start with the Christian Haynes storyline. I mean, from the beginning of camp until now, even back to OTAs, they put him at right guard with the ones, and there is every opportunity for him to win that role. Anthony Bradford was very clearly behind him. I think that they were sending a message to Anthony Bradford about, like, he's going to have to really, really earn it this time. He's not just going to get handed that job. And that didn't work out for Haynes. Christian Haynes just did not perform. And then they moved him to center. And he was doing okay there at times, but then he had at least one practice with a lot of problems snapping the ball. And we didn't see it again after that. So we didn't see him there. So he's basically been with the twos, sometimes with the threes. They're kind of moving him all over the place. I think that right guard battle was absolutely one of the biggest storylines of this camp. And the way that sorted itself out has been kind of surprising to see. It's not what I would have guessed. And there are some people that have tried to troll me about, well, you kept saying that this guy, you know, the third round pick last year was going to be, you know, so much better now that they were going to be in his own scheme. I wasn't the only one that thought that might be the case. His coaches from college, his coaches here, that is why he was put in with the first string to start camp. It didn't work out. It's not working out. So I think that's one of the stories. I also think everybody underestimated and could not necessarily count on Anthony Bradford coming in and being in better shape and being ready to compete in ways that he has not been in previous years. So it's both a credit to Bradford and, you know, a kind of an unfortunate thing for Christian Haynes. So that is, I think, one of the big storylines. I think center, I think that was a job that was a different type of battle. We saw Olu Oluwatimi coming in as the leader in that battle from the beginning. And I think all the way up until he had an injury, I think he still was the guy as the starter. And then he got injured. And when he got injured, then you saw Jalen Sundell really take advantage of that opportunity and kind of make it so that there wasn't another option for the coaching staff other than to recognize like the offseason work that Jalen Sundell put in, the chemistry that you saw on the offensive line, the production they saw in the running game, just the overall command. I think that he surged into the lead, and I think they've seen that, and I don't believe they're going to go back. So I think center and right guard are two of the biggest stories. The offensive line was a huge part of the storyline going into camp. Abe Lucas being at every single practice, playing every snap, not missing, not needing time off, looking like a Pro Bowl or all pro level right tackle. Huge storyline for this training camp. Really big deal. Some other things that maybe were not as positive, I would say. I think Byron Murphy is a guy that, you know, I was really wanting to see him take a second year leap. So far, I have not seen it. Now, it is a little harder to evaluate defensive tackles in practice, but I just went through Leonard Williams destroying the line multiple times in this past practice. There hasn't been a practice where Byron Murphy has done that. So I have not seen Byron Murphy flash the way I had hoped. So that's a little bit disappointing. Let's hope when you get into the regular season and teams are having to deal with him and Leonard Williams and Jaron Reed and whatever else that shows up. I think DeMarcus Lawrence has been a story in camp where this is a guy that is a older veteran, you know, kind of cast aside by the Cowboys, missed most of last year with an injury. He could have come back last year, but they ended up not doing it. And I think he's looked great. I think he looks like he means business. I think he is someone who, honestly, it wouldn't shock me if DeMarcus Lawrence has a more impactful year as an edge player for the Seahawks than Boye Mafe or Derek Hall. And that's not because I think Boye Mafe and Derek Hall are bad players, but I think DeMarcus Lawrence looks like a difference maker on the edge. And I think he's going to be maybe one of the sneakiest free agent additions that they've made this offseason. So that's a storyline. Other storylines. I mean, how can you have a conversation about training camp without Sam Darnold? I mean, Sam Darnold, we talked to Cooper Kupp today. We talked to Ernest Jones today. And he acknowledged that the first few weeks of OTAs, it was rough. The offense was rough. It was rough. Like, we were telling you what was going on. We weren't lying about it. It wasn't great. But Ernest Jones said when they got back to training camp, it was already good. And it's been, good since. I think it's hit another gear in the last week and a half. I think Sam Darnold has hit another gear. Again, I didn't see any interceptions from him today. It's been a while since he's thrown a pick, and he seems really to be getting comfortable and in command of this offense. And that was a huge question coming in. Now he's got to transition that into the regular season, and there's a lot left. But if I was a Seahawks fan that had only been, listening and not watching, I will just tell you there's reasons to be pretty encouraged about the version of Sam Darnold that the Seahawks are getting heading into the season. I'm not saying he's going to put up the same numbers he did last year, but given where the camp started, where it looked like, oh boy, he might be like the Carolina Panthers version of Sam Darnold and really be a player that holds this team back, to a guy now who looks like he could lift the team in certain situations, that he could make better decisions, turn the ball over less, be better about getting rid of the ball on quick dump offs, like the things that he's talked about that he learned last year that led him to that, huge breakout season. I'm seeing a lot of those things now. And I'm seeing also the first part of camp, there were no explosive passes. He was dumping the ball off all the time. Now there's an explosive pass pretty much every single day, multiple usually per day. He is playing great in the red zone. So That's a big storyline of this camp. I think the Kenneth Walker health has been a storyline. He has been on again, off again, and Zach Charbonnet has been there every single day. So I think that is something to watch. I think there have been some messages sent through the media to Kenneth Walker, and I'm sure directly to him as well. Who knows how much the contract status plays into that. Maybe, you know, Kenneth Walker is not as encouraged to risk some injury in practice when he doesn't have an extension. I don't know what goes into it, but that's certainly been a conversation point. Torrey Horton Jr., huge, like, swing player for this team. I think the story coming into camp was, is this a guy? He's a fifth round pick, even though he probably was a steal in the fifth round. Is it really realistic to expect that a fifth round pick can come in and be a big contributor? The reality is, yes. Like, he looks like he's poised to be a solid contributor. I'm not going to say he's going to have a Puka Nacua kind of rookie year, but I do think this is a guy that you will feel his presence. Defenses will have to account for him. He will be a meaningful part of this offense, assuming he can stay on the field. He does have some sort of ankle injury. I think they're just being, it's precautionary, but he is a slender build guy. He's coming off an injury. You just do have to acknowledge that that might be the case. The last storyline I'll at least touch on right now, there's others I'll get to in future episodes of Hawk Blogger Mornings and Real Hawk Talk and all that. Derek Young, slow start to camp, was kind of absent overall. He has been one of, if not the best offensive player on the field for the last week, 2 weeks. Certainly has the most big plays, had a number of big plays in the last preseason game. He's making big time plays. He reminds me like of Ricardo Lockett a little bit, just a rocked up, physical, talented player who can do a lot of things and I think is gaining a lot of confidence and coming at a good time. Let me get to these super chats before I got to go over to Seahawks Collective. Jacoby says, did you happen to rewatch the game against the Chiefs? If so, were you able to evaluate Murphy's snaps? I did watch some of the game against the Chiefs. I did watch Murphy's snaps. I might do a show and do that again like I did before with just the still images. Unfortunately, even the video that I put in there of the one play got me a copyright notice, and so I had to trim that out. But anyway, there was one play I saw from Murphy that was good, but I generally was not super excited about what I saw from Byron Murphy in that short period that he was in. We got Studios Josh joined as a YouTube member. Welcome to the crew, man. Glad to have you. Kizzy FM, who's been a member for 2 months. So love the longtime members, says, could we send Haynes for an off-ball linebacker or nose tackle? I don't think they're looking for a nose tackle. I think they like Quentin Bohanna and Brandon Peely, and they've got, you know, Byron Murphy and Jaron Reed all can play nose tackle as well. So I don't think nose tackle's on the shopping list right now. Linebacker off-ball could be. And yes, I think that's possible that they might look at a position like that as part of a trade. Just depends on what happens over the next few days. Conmera 789 says, is it wild to think Seattle will be a devastating smash mouth team, but also exotic like the Packers using jet sweeps, creative runs with Milroe? No, it is not wild. It is going to happen. I think that's the expectation I have. All right, folks, head on over to the Seahawks Collective. I'm about to go myself over there on the Seahawks Collective channel with Michael Sean Dugar, Annabelle Hasselbeck, and Rob Staton. See you there. Until then, I'm Brian Nemhauser. This has been the final post-practice report. Hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you give the show a like and make sure you subscribe to the channel. Take care, everybody.